We welcome Alex and Nancy as our speakers today at our 7 a.m. Sunday morning 30-60-90 meeting of May 16, 2021. When you speak, it is considered implied consent to have your voice and your share recorded and posted on oafootsteps.com as a podcast. To preserve your anonymity, please use only your first name or an alias when you share. We thank you for your service. A reminder to all those listening, the opinions expressed here today are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. And I will add to that, only the audio portion will be converted into a podcast. The video portion will be destroyed. So you're not going to get your face shown anywhere. And with that, I don't know, Alex or Nancy, who wants to go first, but you take it away.
I think I'm going first. Hi, everybody. I recognize a lot of you, and I am Nancy. I am a compulsive overeater, and thank you for inviting me to speak at this ungodly hour here. Anyway, I can't even imagine saying what I have to say in 10 minutes, but I'm going to try. I want to speak some on abstinence, and I want to give you a really brief history of myself. I was in OA in the early 1970s. It was so early, we didn't have any OA books. All we did was follow the AA book and substitute the word food for alcohol and compulsive overeater for alcoholic. And even back then, I identified absolutely. It took me a year to get any semblance of abstinence together, but after a year, I had abstinence for the next 5 years. And I was like so thrilled that, oh, I've lost all my weight. I was at that magic 120 and all the cravings had disappeared. I worked very, very hard in the program. I did the steps. I did service work. I had sponsees. I took telephone calls at all times of the night. And the only problem with that for me was I was still a human doing. I was at everybody's beck and call. And little by little, I didn't realize it, but my program was getting eroded because I was doing way too much. And one time I was at a place and I did not prepare for my lunch. And I thought, okay, I'll just buy my lunch. And I did. And I thought, well, it's been 5 years, no cravings, lost over 100 pounds. All right, I can have this, sorry about the name, but a yogurt, a regular yogurt. And what it did was, this disease tells you you don't have a disease because I was okay with it for a week and I was teaching and I would have it every day at lunch. I'm saying, it doesn't bother me at all. Well, I did not respect that first bite. With all the readings and service and everything else, I had thought in my mind, or my disease has thought in my mind, you can just have this. It's easy to take every day to work. You can have this. This is not a whole bunch of sugar. And I did. And that turned into the frozen stuff. And the frozen stuff turned into the real frozen stuff. And that led to a 45-year relapse where it was very hard for me to get back. I tried. And I'll tell you, for anybody that's out there in relapse, when you go back and you start eating after a long period of time of not compulsively eating, you know exactly what is going on. OA never leaves you. For all those 45 years, I knew exactly what I was doing. And bringing it up to today, because I want to keep on time here, I had regained my weight plus more. I was 265 pounds and I had gained 135 pounds and I had just gotten my doctor read me my record. I had a doctor because I was not feeling good. And she said, I have terminal cancer, three different kinds of cancer. It was terminal. There was no help for it. There was no chemo you could get for it. She gave me 15 months. And I asked her while I was there, I said, do you think the way that I've eaten and my obesity could have anything to do with this? And I really thought she was going to pat me on the shoulder and say, oh, no, dear, you're not responsible for it. But she didn't. She said, yes, of course, yes. And I sat there and just went, oh, my God. And I came home. I was in a wheelchair. I had terrible diabetes. And I used to shoot myself up a little more with the insulin so I could eat. I wasn't feeling anything at the time. In fact, I was feeling relief that I didn't have to go to doctor. I was feeling a relief, but I'm sitting there in my wheelchair and thinking for the first time, maybe in 45 years, I said, God, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? I'm so obese, it's hard for me to get in and out of the chair. You know, I can't possibly go out to eat because I don't fit in booths. And if I did, I'm not breathing and my chest is on the table. That didn't help much. And my whole world got swallowed up by food and illness. And what I heard from sitting in that chair was a simple, go look on OA, go look if there's OA online. And I thought, what? And this was like almost 3 years ago. Go look and see if it's online. And so I rolled over to my computer and I looked, and sure enough, OA was online, but it was only on as a typing kind of an OA where hardly anybody got to share because we were all busy typing and half of us, like me, could not type. So there weren't very many shares, but I decided, because I remember it, go to 90 meetings in 90 days. If I do nothing at all, go to 90 meetings in 90 days. So I did. And from the very first day, I was graced with getting a food plan, following it, and asking my higher power like crazy, because I didn't know anyone yet, to help me through the night and then help me through another night, because nighttime was my eating time. But any time was my eating time, but night especially, because everybody was asleep. I didn't have to embarrass myself by, you know, eating in front of anybody. And I was so obese, you know, I could just picture my family saying, why are you eating all the time? But I went to those 90 meetings. I got my abstinence the first day. And I met Alex, who's going to talk in a little while, that first day. We have remained friends ever since. And that abstinence means everything to me. I so respect the first bite of a trigger food, a food for the newcomers, a food that will make you eat more food. It's just like alcohol. An alcoholic drinks alcohol. They want more alcohol. If I eat certain foods, I want more foods. I can eat other foods, but I don't, that's what I eat. And I have kept that now for almost 3 years. I'm within a few pounds of my goal weight right now. And I'm telling you, I have cancer that's fatal, and I don't exercise. I don't do anything out of the ordinary. I can't even walk around a whole lot. And I still have taken off 112 pounds. So, you know, the most important thing for me is having my abstinence now. I think God got me here. My higher power got me here. But abstinence for me is the gateway to the rest of the program. Because when I am abstinent, when I'm first abstinent, the cravings for food go away. And it's almost like you're a normal person, but it fools you because that's what they call a pink cloud period. And it fools you because unless I don't jump into those steps, I have to put down the drink, put down the food, and then get into the steps so I can think clearly about what made me like this and how am I going to change that around.
2 minute warning, please.
Oh, what do I have? 5 minutes? 2 minutes?
2 minutes.
Okay. Oh, I feel like, all right, now I don't know what I want to say. All I want to say is that I have been blessed. I have had my abstinence ever since. I've gotten just about all my weight off. The cravings are gone because I went right into the steps. And most of all, I have relied on my higher power. I had to think about things like not doing perfectionism, not doing people pleasing. I had to learn how to be kind to myself, to do for myself what I would do for others first, and then others came second. This is not a, you know, you do everything for everybody else and then you'll get it. And the last thing I want to talk about is that and I'll stop after this. When I came into OA, I really was expecting somebody to tell me what abstinence is, what is the diet I'm going on, what am I going to do? And for me, now I know that this is a program of responsibility. Nobody can tell me what to eat. I make up my food plan because, excuse me, while I'm here, you know, because I'm here, I know every diet, every calorie, every everything that's in all the foods. I'm not looking for nutritionists anymore. I'm not looking for doctors to fix me. I'm not even looking for people to fix me, except for the people in OA when they tell their stories, because it gives me so many ideas of how I can fix myself. All right, I'm ending up now. I feel like I haven't said anything of what I wanted to say, but I just want to encourage you that this program does work. For the last 3 years, I have not had the cravings. I've gone through the steps. I will probably go through them again. And I wish this all for you because it's the closest you can get to being a normal person with food, just as long as you remember, which I had forgotten, I am not a normal person with food. So listen, thank you, everybody, and good luck to everyone. Thanks.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Alex. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm in Atlantic Canada, Nova Scotia. And I'm just coming up for my third year of abstinence on August 3rd. I've got this little program that tells me I'm on my 1,017th day of abstinence. I didn't even understand that this was an addiction for most of my life. I didn't get that until the day I came to OA. I absolutely did not give it the same credence. I was aware of alcoholism and drug addiction and cigarettes and life, you know, everything else, but I didn't equate that with food. And so it basically gave me the freedom to eat whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted, and which is what I did. I ate over everything. Anything that was eating at me, I ate over it. And I just, here in Atlantic Canada, they've got this thing called storm chips. It's whenever there's a storm coming in, everybody piles into the grocery stores and comes out with a cart of chips. And I'm sorry if we're not supposed to say food names here. I'm not sure. And I thought this was brilliant. This was just the excuse I needed to go and buy a cart of this food substance anytime there's a storm coming in. There was one problem. There wasn't enough storms in Nova Scotia for me to do that. So I had to come up with my own. So I decided these were my therapy chips. And I seriously knew I was medicating myself with food. I've dealt with chronic pain and health issues for a lot of years. I was diabetic, didn't stop me from eating though. And I ate everything, sugars, the whole bit. And I was eating myself to death, just anything 24/7 nonstop. I had there's nothing stopping me. And I was literally almost intentfully trying to kill myself with food. Like that was my goal, I think, at that time. I didn't have a lot of hope. I didn't have a lot to live for at that time. And then I found OA and it sort of landed in my lap. It was an epiphany in a single moment, and suddenly I was in program, and my life completely changed that day. I found home. Like I'd never known that this was an addiction. I didn't understand this. And suddenly it just, everything started to make sense. And I really didn't have the experience. My family was like a lot of alcoholics. So I had a lot of program background, and I kind of understood it to some degree, but I'd never felt like I was an alcoholic. Although I could drink, I sort of could walk away from it too. But I recognized the elements in my life. I just didn't understand that food was my substance of choice. And so I found program. I found an abstinence my very first day. I gave away my trigger foods. There was two foods that I could not live without every day. Those are the ones that I lied about and hid. And then gradually it changed, and I stopped eating 24/7, and I cut myself down to 3 meals a day, no snacks. But then because I'm diabetic and I suddenly stopped eating all the time, my blood sugars were bottoming out, and it was just my body reacting to all sorts of things. And so I had to incorporate some metabolic snacks into my diet. What I came to understand is that abstinence is a journey. It's not a destination. It's not a goal weight. It's not a place I'm achieving it. It's not a list of things that I have to do all in one day. It was just a process of integrating things into a newfound abstinence over the course of time. And gradually I was able to cut away all sugars, all white flours, my diet became more and more, my food plan became more and more clear as the months went on in my program. And after about 3 months, I was off of all my insulins. And after 6 months, I was off of all my diabetic medications. And, and it's been a slow progress. My body, my metabolism, it's a bit slower. I'm not losing the weight as fast as other people have, but I am steadily losing, which is kind of nice and encouraging, keeping me going. But for me, it's not about the weight. It never was, actually. To be honest, I actually didn't mind being overweight because it was like a buffer to the world. I was kind of, I didn't really. But the one thing that really locked me, when we were talking about tools, the one thing that really locked me into program was service, right? From day dot, I came in and I was leading meetings within 3 weeks because I just, by giving away, I seemed to give back. I get back so much more. And I didn't, it just was this give and take relationship with program that just made it all. And shortly after I'd met Nancy and a few others in program, we had found Zoom, and we decided that we would meet for the first time on Zoom and just try a meeting to actually see each other's faces, because we'd only ever typed each other. We were typed friends. We'd never seen each other. And we got together on this one day on April 14th, 2018. And we had a meeting on Zoom, and we saw each other for the first time, and we all cried. There was three of us there at that meeting that day. And we did the reading that day from Voices of Recovery. And if you look on April 14th from Voices of Recovery, it's on page 105 in that book. I'll just read the first part of it. It says, "We gratefully follow in the footsteps of many others who have walked this way before us. And we're gratified to be making footprints of our own for others to follow." And I remember reading that day and looking up and going, oh my God, that's the name of this meeting. We'll call ourselves OA Footsteps. And that was the start of that meeting. Little to know, I was about 7 months into program at that point. I had no idea within the next 5 months that we would actually be an intergroup. And that then we were actually in place as an online Zoom intergroup in time for COVID to hit. And of course, we were a platform online already, as all the other face-to-face meetings were sort of migrating. Oh my God, we need to get onto Zoom. We were already there. And we just were able to provide a stable platform for so many people. And now we have upwards of 700 people per day using this platform. Like, I just think of all the people that are finding recovery in this meeting, in this platform, in this intergroup of meetings. And all this in my first 3 years of program. Like I look back at this and go, like, I don't quite know how I managed to do that, but I had the tech stuff, so at least that helped kind of coming into it. But I couldn't have survived this last 3 years without program and without the service and without that, because it just locked me in, right? It just kept me present always and at meetings. And there was a question that was asked earlier, and it was asking, what would you do like late at night, you know, when you're struggling and stuff like that? When I first came to program, that first month was horrible. It's like you're listening, but you're
2 minutes.
Thank you. It's no different than coming off of alcohol or giving up cigarettes. There's definitely a withdrawal process that happens when it comes to giving up the trigger foods, the foods that have you like in their grip, and letting go of those foods and letting go of the food behaviors around food that you're just locked into. Like with cigarettes, it was just that hand to mouth sort of movement. And then with food, it was hand to mouth. It's always hand to mouth, and giving up these behaviors, giving up these addictions. You go through withdrawals, and they are legitimate and they are horrible and they are so, but the only way out is through. And it's a commitment. I had to just sort of put my focus forward and just go through this and get through that first month, 2 months of withdrawal. And the way I did that was I went to meetings. I went to meetings 4 or 5 times a day. Sometimes they say this is a 30, 60, 90 meeting. Well, I went to like 450 meetings that first month, because I couldn't have done it without meetings, without listening, without being, I was using the tools. I was like, it was desperate measures for me just to hang on and get through. I was holding on by a thread, but that thread then became a rope, and that rope just became a chain. And it's now I'm just embraced by this program. And I just feel that this has been, it's been, the program talks, it promises us. It really does. It actually promises and guarantees that if we're willing to do this program, we're going to find ourselves in a different place. And I don't recognize the person that I've become and the joy that I have in my heart, and the confidence and the way I feel about myself is so different from the person that first walked into this program 3 years ago. So I'm just so grateful to be here. So grateful to this meeting and to all the people that are here. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you both. I'm just going to make a quick comment, and that is that I think I'm speaking for everyone who is in this room and people who aren't in this room, how grateful we are that you were moved, the two of you with that third person were moved to get this concept started when you did. And that it is here for all of us today. And so many people are, you know, benefiting from that. And they say when we do a good deed, it comes back to us. And so I pray that everyone who is here continues to do good deeds, and you guys continue to do good deeds, so it keeps coming back to all of us, so that we can keep growing ourselves and each other. And I just needed to say that before we move on with the questions. Alex, you actually answered a question that you could have done after you finished sharing about yourself. So while you're sharing about an answer, you can put a little bit in if you want to, you know, do that. But I'm going to turn it back over to Ron.
Thank you. It's incredible what I've heard this morning from both Nancy and Alex and others who have been sharing as we went along in the chat. It's inspirational for me. I just posted in the chat a list of links for OA Footsteps to all the different areas you might want to go to. I've been watching in the chat that there are several first time or second timers here, and we just want you to know that we're with you. You're not alone in this. And sometimes I need to convince myself of that. Hang in. There's a lot of people who have posted contact information. If anybody who has posted their contact information is just by the fact that they posted it is giving you permission to contact them. And whether maybe the person may or may not be able to answer the question you have, but more than likely they can lead you to wherever or whomever can be the person that can give you the guidance that you're looking for. And so we invite you to join. This is another reminder that this is being recorded, and only the audio will be turned into a podcast and the video will be destroyed. Yes, Roz. Unmute, please.
I have a question for our two speakers, and that's coming from, I'm sure you've heard this question before, and either one of you could be first. The question is, I'm rephrasing it. How do we go about getting a sponsor? What's all this sponsor? What is a sponsor supposed to do for me? That's the essence of the question that was posed here. So either one of you, if you'd like to answer that one, and then we'll, if there are other co-leaders that have questions, just let Ron know.
Do you want me to go or do you want to go, Nancy?
Go ahead, you go.
So they say, I'm Alex, again, compulsive eater. They say when you're at a meeting, look for someone who has what you want and ask them how they're achieving it, he or she's achieving it. And then to find out if they're available to sponsor or not. It's not something that, it might happen, it might not right away. Different people approach sponsoring from different ways. And there's a whole bunch of different types of sponsoring relationships that you can be looking for. You might look for somebody that could help you through the steps, or you might look for a food sponsor that you report your food to every day, or you might look for a sponsor buddy, like just somebody that, I mean, finding somebody in program that could just be your buddy that you talk to every day can be the most powerful sponsor as well. Like in a more sort of face-to-face sort of situation. There's all sorts of different ways of sponsoring, and there's no right or wrong way of finding a sponsor, really. And if something's not working for you, don't be afraid to go find another one. Like just be. And there is some sponsoring podcasts available on OA Footsteps already, and there is some on Virtual Region as well. So maybe I could go find some links to help with that.
Thank you.
Did you want me to comment too? Or
please, yeah, both of you. If both of you, each question, you both are, we didn't give really good instructions. Apologize there.
That's okay.
Well, progress.
I agree with Alex, you know, to really find somebody who has what you want. I know my sponsor from the 70s was a guy, and, you know, that was frowned upon, but he was the one that stood out to me that, you know, he had 30 years of sobriety and 20 years of abstinence. And I thought, that's the person I want. And I got him and I learned so much from him. When I got here, I didn't know anybody. And I happened to go to the very first meeting with Alex. And we just became OA buddies. We didn't have sponsors at that time. We were kind of like co-sponsoring, co-going through the steps, doing a lot of things, big book studies. And then one day I found somebody who I wanted them to be my sponsor. And it was somebody who was talking about perfectionism and people pleasing And I was to the point where with the typing that we were doing, I was such a bad typist that when I would look up, I thought, oh my gosh, I'm typing Martian. Nobody knows what I'm saying because I can't type. And, you know, the people pleasing came out in me, the perfectionism came out in me. And I wouldn't even share after a while. I was just listening because I was so mortified that I wasn't perfect. But this person showed up. Boy, the teacher shows up when you're ready. And I was so ready to get rid of it because I was a human doing for people. Even when I was sick, I was doing for them and disregarding myself and the way I felt. Their stuff was more important than mine. Their stuff was more important than my family. It was everybody that didn't matter out there I was putting first. And then I was putting my family second. And then maybe I was putting myself third. And God was nowhere in the picture. And that pyramid was upside down. And I thought this girl was so good because she had abstinence. I wanted somebody that had abstinence for a long, you know, a fairly long time. And but she talked about one of my worst things that I had to go over in my fourth step, that I actually was not kind to myself or my family. Oh, everybody else came first. And it was because I just couldn't stand rejection. I wanted people to love me. And what I had to do was learn that God loved me. My higher power loved me. I'm the apple of his eye. I'm his creation. And with God loving me, do I need all these people to love me? Could they reject me and I would still be okay? Well, my sponsor taught me how to love myself and unscrew my own eyes and screw in the eyes of my higher power so I could see myself in a different light. And in seeing myself in a different light, I saw the world as it is. I saw people in a different light. I saw users, abusers. And I wasn't willing to do that anymore. And my sponsor helped me tremendously with that. So that's how it was about 3 months after I got into program where I got a sponsor. It wasn't right away. So that's it.
Details. The question was raised, being brand new, I don't know what to do first. How do I start working this program? And I've asked John to keep a 90-second on the reply so that, because I see we're getting close to the end and we don't want to miss out on anything that our speakers or our participants have to say. So whoever wants to take it away.
Hi, I'm Alex. I'm a compulsive eater. Where to start? You've already started. You're in the right place. The first step is just being here and being present and being willing to listen. And I think listening is kind of the thing that really helps. Getting to meetings, get to as many meetings as you possibly can over the next little while, and listen to what people are saying, the stories, because these are our stories. You know, like they reflect, we might have very, very different personal lives, but the stories that we relate, we speak the same language, and something is going to start to shift deep down inside. Just be willing to be part of that process. You know, the willingness is what gets us through. So just keep coming back, even on days when you just don't want to come back, keep coming back. And that's the first thing that I think we need to make that commitment to just being here and being present and being willing. And then after that, it's a matter of like letting the program guide you. You know, like you're going to be encouraged to get sponsors and use the tools and start working the steps and set your plans up. And it'll all start to happen. It doesn't all have to happen today, but it will start to happen and unfold for you as you go forward. So thank you.
Yeah, I agree with Alex, you know, that it will happen. And as long as we're here, as long as we're trying to take phone numbers from other people, maybe give a call, get a call, we're all in recovery. So the only time we're not in recovery is when we give up, like I did for those 45 years. There was something else I wanted to say. Oh, for the very, very newcomers, I know I wanted to come into program and be told, what do I eat? What do I do? Da, 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 da. Especially, what do I eat? Because every diet I went on, it's they're telling you what to eat. And here, they don't tell you what to eat. You can get a diet. You could do Weight Watchers and do this program. But by the time we get here, most of us are diet experts. You know, you usually don't end up here because I remember each time there was a new diet or a new book or a new anything, I was like so excited. It was going to work. It was going to work. And then it never did, not for any length of time. And so you get to make up what your own food plan is. And the only definition of abstinence is planning what you eat and eating what you plan. And for me, not a carrot stick more. I do that and I make it livable. I don't weigh and measure things, and I still lose weight. So, you know, I need my higher power. I need another person to agree with this with me, but you'll find out you don't have to do any particular
plan. Time is up.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I think the bane of our existence today, the new bane of our existence is infomercials. Because they all look so appealing and they're going to work and this is it. And it ain't. The question was raised that what happens when you're in relapse and you are getting suggestions from people how to fix yourself? How do you handle that?
This one's yours, Nancy.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, I was in 45 years of relapse. And, you know, when I broke my abstinence with that one food item, when it was in the 70s, early 70s, and back then, there was hardly anybody that had any long-term abstinence. And like they kind of put you on a pedestal, and I kind of let them put me on a pedestal because I've never been on a pedestal. And when it came time that I was having trouble with food, I couldn't ask for help. You know, I just couldn't ask for help. And finally, when I did ask for help, the person said, oh, I'm really sorry you're having trouble, but here's my problems. So I never got a chance to have somebody help me with relapse. With me, with everything I've ever been addicted to, I have to hit rock bottom. The cancer was rock bottom. I don't know how much more I could have gone. It was rock bottom for me to ask my higher power. And all I said was, oh God, what am I going to do? I didn't even say, oh God, what am I going to do? It was like, oh God, what am I going to do? And then listen to your gut, because, you know, my heart gets in the way. It's so big for other people. It should be bigger for myself. My brain gets in the way, but my gut always tells me the truth. And I think that's where my higher power resides.
Time is up, please.
Okay. Thanks.
I'll chime in on that one just quickly, just to say that there are some wonderful tools of program for chronic relapsing and relapsing. And there's, I don't have it up on hand, but there are, I do know that there's a lot of wonderful, wonderful tools for people that have come back from relapse that can, or are in danger of relapse, and they can sort of stay off the danger part there. So, sorry. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you both. This has been incredible. Just from the comments that I've seen in the chat room, it's that you've touched a lot of people, myself included. Roz, do you want to, since you have control of the template, you want to close out? And I'll just give people a reminder that what we have at the end of the meeting is the parking lot. You know, similarly to those who had gone to face-to-face meetings, and you'd leave the room and you go outside and talk, and you're usually standing in the parking lot talking. So we have our virtual parking lot, where I don't want to say all the rules don't apply, but it is not an official part of the meeting. So interaction is not discouraged, and people can say maybe more freely what they need to say. So I'm going to turn it back over to Roz so she can do the official closing.
I'd like to just thank everybody who asked questions. And what was interesting, a number of people wrote to me and said, my questions are being answered as they speak. And so I want to let you know that though there aren't a lot of questions coming to you as you were speaking, your experience, strength, and hope came through to people who were saying, oh, that's what I needed to hear. And you don't have that feedback because it went directly to me. So just so
I one quick thing, because I know you don't have a chance to read the chats. Somebody asked a question, will Nancy and Alex be remaining in the parking lot? And we didn't actually even ask them, I don't think.
Okay, yeah. If you're able to stick around beyond for a few minutes, that would be great. Someone did say that if they have time, it would be wonderful to hear if they had to pick one beautiful experience that they've had since being in program, they'd love to hear that. But that person said, I can wait for the parking lot. And then they, assuming that you would be there, but you know, your time is your time. And as you said so beautifully, Nancy, we each need to take care of ourselves first before we take care of each other.